How do you feel about that?
Terrified. Absolutely terrified.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. Bayern Munich nabbed their second consecutive Bundesliga win this past weekend, overcoming Bundesliga Minnows Mainz 6-1 at the Allianz Arena. Several new faces made their home debuts in a performance that wasn't quite as impressive as the scoreline suggests. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about that game with my friends Garrett Kerber.
Hello, everybody.
Tim Richards.
Hello there.
And of course, Sebastian Zimmermann.
Hi.
Yeah, so we finally have got the whole gang back together for this one, ready to really push into the new season. And apparently Bayern Munich are feeling the same way, beating Mainz 6-1 this past weekend. A very impressive scoreline. Goals from Benjamin Pavard, David Alaba, even Perisic, Robert Lewandowski, Kingsley Coman, and Alphonso Davies came in and grabbed the last one. It is hard to complain about a 6-1 win, but at the same time, at least for me, it's difficult to feel too impressed by the performance from Bayern Munich. Tim, you feel the same way about that?
Yeah, I think 70% of this match was good and noteworthy and quite promising for the rest of the season. But it seems to be the same problem that's followed by not just under Kovac, but under Heinkes, under Ancelotti, under Guardiola, and everybody. The first 20 minutes of the game, Bayern just did not look like they were going to do anything. And Kovac even said in his press conference afterwards, like before we had our drinks break, and I think it's because it was just far too hot to be playing football for full of 90 minutes. Up until the drinks break, we weren't in control like we did. We were very slow, very sluggish. So I guess like that's a great sign, if only for like somebody that is pro Kovac, to see that this is a guy that can motivate the players, or at least can identify this team is lacking something needs to change. Generally I was quite happy with how the game went after about like 20 minutes or so, but that is still a problem.
Was there any noticeable shift or anything, any particular change that you think changed the course of the game?
Personally, I think it was, I guess, like having that half time before half time, it was a chance for Bayern to kind of just restart the game. I think there's always a case of, you know, going down a goal early is kind of like make or break for Bayern. It can either be, oh, right, okay, let's focus. Like there were a number of times like two seasons ago, especially towards the end, where Bayern just got a little bit complacent and they were conceding goals like quite early on after about like 10 minutes, I think like a couple of times. It's something that's followed Bayern for so long, whether it's just a matter of them, you know, not hearing the first whistle and completely ignoring everything for the first 10 minutes until something like that happens, like they go down a goal so early. I think I can think back to Jupp Heynckes' last season. Bayern were conceding goals very early on because teams just knew if we run at this team, they will, like, they'll fall over. Teams are now no longer as scared to face Bayern as they maybe were in the past. And what that means is that Bayern take the foot off the pedal and they concede early goals in such typical manner. Like having the ball come in from out wide and then somebody beats their defender to a header. Having that break halfway through was just very, very helpful. I think I don't know what was changed, like whether it was like a positional thing or like Kovac said, what are you doing? You need to focus. But something changed during that drinks break and it was definitely for the better.
Sebastian, Garrett, what do y'all make of the Bayern Munich performance we saw this past weekend?
Well, I think Tim is being a bit more generous there than I would be. I think I really saw a performance of kind of three parts, more or less. The start was really not good at all. Then there was the part of the game where we scored quite some goals, but I was still not exactly happy. It was more like yeah, we were kind of dominating, but we were not, yeah, developing the chances that I was hoping for. There was, again, this lack of creativity we had been talking about in recent weeks. So, yeah, you cannot really complain too much about that, I guess, but I still wasn't exactly happy. And then there was, like, the last, like, I don't know, I think 25 minutes or something like that, where I was really happy about what was going on with when Thomas Müller and Alfonso Davies were on the pitch. I mean, I don't know if it's fair to put it on those two players. I'm not exactly saying they completely brought the change there. This is especially not meant as criticism of Coutinho or Perisic, really. I think they played quite well, I think. But yeah, that was really what I would be looking for. That's what I really want to see these last, like, roughly 25 minutes, because suddenly things happened much quicker than they did before. It was not the same stale old thing we had been doing all game, but now it was interesting. Now they were doing the good stuff, and I really would like to see more of that, I guess. I think that's the bottom line for me. That's really the most important takeaway on my part there.
Yeah, like you, I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing Felipe Coutinho or Alfonso, or sorry, Ivan Perisic, but when Thomas Müller came into the match Saturday, it was like a whole new Bayern was on the pitch. Things moved more quickly. The attacks were flowing. Just his presence made such a big difference. At least that's how I saw it. Garrett, did you see that the same way? And then also, you know, do you lean more towards Tim and think this was not too much a performance to be worried about, or more with Sebastian and think that we were kind of saved by a few moments of brilliance for the most part?
I think looking ahead to RB Leipzig, I would be concerned because of the way that Bayern started the match. That's not going to fly against RB Leipzig. If you start like that, you're more likely to be down 2-0 or worse than if you're playing a Mainz. But in and of itself, the match itself was actually pretty decent to have played as poorly as they did, and kind of I think maybe the word is more disjointed than anything. It just seemed like they lacked kind of this cohesive idea of all 11 men working towards the same goal in the same way. It kind of just seemed like there's a lot of fine performances from everybody. Like, I don't think that there was anybody that played particularly poorly over the course of the match. Obviously, we were thinking that Pavard didn't play super well at the beginning, but he kind of picked it up by the end of the match. But yeah, I guess I would just kind of point out the fact that there were four players on the pitch for Bayern that, I mean, at most have a couple games under their belt as, you know, as starters for Bayern. They've only been here for a little while. So I think that there's just this lack of cohesion that's kind of there right now. And when Müller came on, you could see really quickly that they knew how to play together. They, you know, players were playing off of each other a little bit more than just kind of finding spots and, you know, trying to pick off. I guess it's kind of analogous to if you go out and you play a pickup game, and it's just like, okay, we're going to pick teams right at the beginning and then just split up and go. It takes a little while to start to kind of figure out how everybody plays, where they like the ball, what you can try, what you can't try. And so I think that had a lot to do with it. Fortunately, they were playing against Mainz, and they were able to kind of get those work those kinks out a little bit more and still just completely thrash them. I mean, I do think that that's worth noting, is that they didn't play particularly well and still won 6-1. But like you guys have kind of alluded to, I mean, I don't know that you can look at this match and say, oh, Bayern are ready to just destroy the league. I think that there's still very real concerns, but I also think that there's some positives to take that, you know, after conceding a goal, they didn't concede again and really weren't challenged too much. They still haven't conceded a goal in the second half of any of their matches, in the Bundesliga at least. So that's a positive as well. I thought Kingsley Coman played well on the right wing, and so that's encouraging. But yeah, I would just say slightly disappointing because it didn't look like there was this cohesive idea from all 11, but nothing too terribly concerning for me. At least nothing that I don't think will get worked out.
I really like that the word you used, disjointed. I think that does, at least for the first 30, maybe even 40 minutes, kind of describe how Bayern looked. And I think you make an excellent point talking, you know, four of the starting 11 were new signings from the summer. So you can't expect them to come in and immediately gel and play like, you know, world beaters. At the same time, we would hope for more of a clear attacking idea and a clear just understanding of how to play with one another. Tim, we missed you last week, and we talked about this last week, so I want to come to you now. This is the second week in a row Niko Kovac has used Joshua Kimmich in midfield and Benjamin Pavard at right back. After the up-and-down performance of Pavard this past weekend and, I guess, slightly disappointing display from Thiago this past weekend as well, do you think Kimmich in midfield and Pavard at right back is something that Bayern should continue with?
I don't think so. It's very hard to argue against it because there are so many points for. Like, Pavard helped France win the World Cup at right back. Kimmich prefers to play in midfield. Like, you have all of these things and you add them up and you think, well, maybe it does make sense to do that. But I think for the betterment of the team rather than individual morale, you should always play the players where they're best and the most effective. I think about the way that Guardiola used Thomas Müller. He obviously wants to play in the middle, and Guardiola had that luxury of being able to play him in the middle. However, when you have so many injuries, Thomas Müller's best position to help out for the team is out wide, because you know, who else is going to do it? You can't play Rafinha at right wing. It just had to be done. I think with the amount of injuries that we've had recently, like Thiago's come back, Tolisso still hasn't really looked 100%. Goretzka, I think Goretzka is he still injured or mm-hmm. is he on the bench? You know, if you have a player that can play in midfield and you have a player that can play at right back at the same time, like if you have those two separate players, I think it's fine to do that. But seeing Kimmich at right back is just too effective to not have. Much in the same way that having Philipp Lahm at right back as opposed to having him in central midfield, okay, maybe it works. But when you have the word I'm looking for is downgrade. But even it's like only a slight downgrade. It is still a downgrade though. Like you have somebody that is, I think we're all agreed, the best right back in the world, certainly top two. If you have him as an option to play him at right back, I think you need to, because taking him away from the flank, it just completely stifles any sense of creativity that Bayern have in attack, which is ironic considering he's a defender. I think it works to have him in midfield, but it shouldn't have to be like that. Like it should always, like I think, I feel more comfortable seeing Kimmich at right back. And of what I've seen of Pavard, I think he can do it at right back, but is better, slightly more central.
Sebastian, I know you're going to have something to say about this, so let me try and get something in first. Last week, I said I was more open to the idea of Kimmich in midfield and Pavard at right back because I would agree 100% Kimmich is the best right back in the world. I would also probably say he's our best midfielder. He's just that good of a player. After watching Pavard this past weekend, especially in the first half, and despite his goal and despite his assist, he was not good at all at right back. So when you have Joshua Kimmich out wide, who can, you know, send in a cross and put it exactly where he wants it to go every single time, and you have Robert Lewandowski waiting in the box to put those goals away, and you go from, you know, that to Pavard, who's sending every single one of his crosses into the stands over and over and over. It breaks down your play so much, especially for Bayern, who relies so heavily on their fullbacks being able to come forward and create. So, you know, that's my strongest argument for Kimmich at right back, but I'm sure Sebastian has plenty to buffer that.
Yeah, first, I think I would totally agree with you that Pavard was really not great this weekend. This doesn't seem to be as easy of a consensus as I would have thought, actually. Some people even, I don't know where I got that from, but some people even said Pavard is the man of the match for them. And yeah, so I was really a bit confused about that. But yeah, at least here on this podcast, I think we kind of agree that this was not great from Pavard, despite, his goal and his assist. So I do agree that Kimmich is definitely much better as a right back than Pavard. But yeah, both of you haven't really talked about the solution at the number six. And really, if I have the choice to either play Kimmich and even, I guess, Davies as a right back, I would still do that over Thiago on the six, really. Because we have seen that it doesn't work. That was an important part of what went wrong last season. I think having Martinez there was a very important factor in saving our season last year. And I don't know. I really don't know how we are going through this again. And I guess I also want to add that I don't think that Thiago playing, well, a bit more like an eight on the weekend had anything to do with his performance, because really that can really only help him, because it takes away the thing that he's the worst at on this position, and it gives him more room to do what he's good at. If Thiago played worse than he usually does, that's either a question of form or, well, just getting used to his kind of new position. Well, we don't know if it's really a new position or if it's just a thing that we're doing right now and that's going to change again. But yeah, I don't know. We really need a solution at the six. And I'm very, very frustrated, of course, as you all know, that there hasn't been a transfer today or yesterday, or, well, there won't be one until the winter, as we see now. And that's not going to help much anyway, so yeah, it's all fine and good talking about how important the right back position can be, I guess. But I'm still, I don't even care who plays there, if it's Pavard or even actually, if Davies would be the next idea that you could come up with, or if you're gonna try a young guy there. Everything really is better than not having a working six. That's just not going to cut it. And I'm really afraid what's going to happen in 1.5 weeks when we play Leipzig, because this really might blow up in our faces if Kimmich is at the right back position again. So, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and kind of split the difference and say I haven't given up on Kimmich in midfield and Pavard at right back, because I think once Pavard gets the Stuttgart out of him, I think he'll be fine. I think a lot of his mistakes that he made on Saturday and in the matches leading up to it were mistakes that he made at Stuttgart, and as he learns how to play with his Bayern teammates, I think he'll start to, you know, make better decisions. I think that we probably have seen, like Sebastian said, we've seen kind of how Thiago does, at least from a defensive perspective, in defensive midfield, which you would think is the most important. And it might work sometimes, and you know, you might get lucky, but I think that you're playing with fire doing that a lot more than you would be having Pavard at right back and Kimmich in midfield. So I kind of lean towards just like keep trying this experiment. However, I would also I wouldn't have a problem with Kovac going back to Kimmich at the right back, because as you guys, and we've always mentioned, is that Kimmich is the best right back in the world, and so it doesn't hurt that much. However, when you talk about going down the center of the pitch, if you have a weak position there, it seems to be a little bit more of a problem than in on the right side there. So I haven't given up on the project, if you want to call it that. I think that by the end of the season, Pavard may be, you know, good enough to where we are not even worried about him playing right back at all. He just got to get the Stuttgart out of him and he'll be fine, I think.
Well, let's look a bit at some of the positives from the weekend, if we can find any. Did anyone, and we'll start with you, Tim, have a standout match for a good reason? Did anyone particularly impress you? I guess your man of the match, if you will, from the game against Mainz.
I really liked Hernandez. I thought he was, considering he's come off of a very bad injury that's taken him out since like February, or like certainly very early on in the year. I think the fact that he was able to play as well as he did and work as brilliantly with everybody around him as he did is like as we've discussed earlier today, just that concept of, it's like unfamiliarity. He doesn't really seem to have a problem with that. Like he's working fantastically, and I wouldn't want to say that he's worth the 80 million euros, because that's a huge price. And you know, you can't win 80 million euros with a 6-1 victory against Mainz. Like, you need to show a little bit more. But of what I've seen of him, I thought he was really good. And Thomas Müller, he was on for like 25 minutes, and got 2 assists, like very effortlessly, as only Müller could. Every time like Bayern have signed like an offensive player like James and now Coutinho, everybody thinks, oh well, Müller's going to get sold, like he doesn't have a position in this team anymore. I think he's shown that even off the bench, like even when he's not starting, he is still of a great value to the team, because what he does is just indescribable. If it means that like this season his best position is as like the 12th man, then great. Like, you know, he's going to try his hardest and work his hardest. And that's really what I want to see in the players of this team. I thought he was fantastic and should not be going like unnoticed there.
Absolutely. You took both players that I was going to mention. Lucas Hernandez had a fantastic game. He touched the ball more than any other player on the pitch, and I think that's something that's definitely worth note. He was all over the place. Extremely impressive work rate, and I love to see that, especially with how error-prone our midfield and defense tends to be. And then, you know, Thomas Müller, you said everything that you can possibly say about a performance like that. I mean, you expect nothing less from him, but you still have to recognize it when he comes on and he, you know, does something like that. Sebastian, Garrett, anyone that you would want to add to that list?
Yeah, I guess the one that I would add first here is David Alaba. I really enjoyed that he got the chance to take that free kick, and I think that was brilliant, of course. I think everyone agrees. But I also think he's kind of thriving from being the more offensive of our fullbacks, because with Kimmich on the right side, he has often been, I think, the one who's, well, taking more of a defensive role in comparison. But I think with Pavard on the other side, that has changed for now. So I think that's really doing him a favor there. And yeah, I think the left side was definitely our better side defensively in that game. So I guess he's the next one I would mention there. I guess other people might mention Robert Lewandowski. I guess that's fine. That's fair. But I don't need to be that guy.
I don't want to cut in, but I had never really, really thought about the fact that, or how much, you know, Pavard being at the right back frees up Alaba on the left back. And I think you're exactly right. I think that's a great observation. And I would just add, I can't wait to see him pairing up with Kingsley Coman, because it seems like the two of them had really built up a good relationship. So I think having both of them on the left side, maybe with Pavard at right back, is still something that's worth trying. Anyway, Garrett, someone that you want to shout out from the weekend?
I think you can just replay what Sebastian said, and that was actually what I was going to bring up was Alaba. I thought he played really well, and it was really good to see him score from a free kick again. And so he was a guy that popped up in my mind as a player to bring up. And then the guys that you guys mentioned. But I think that I think that Kingsley Coman deserves kind of a shout out, because I do think that from the right side, he just seems to be a slightly different player for whatever reason. And I thought he played well. I don't know that the ratings or the stats necessarily bear that out completely, but I really thought he took a little bit of a step forward on Saturday. And then just want to call out Alphonso Davies. I thought he played really well in the little bit over 30 minutes that he had, I guess. So that was good to see him kind of coming on, looking comfortable, and hopefully he's starting to develop more and making up, making that price tag that they paid for him look like a bargain. That would be fantastic. So, yeah, you guys took a lot of the words out of my mouth. That's pretty much what I saw.
Well, you've given us a perfect transition to stop talking about this past weekend's game a little bit by bringing up Alphonso Davies, because it came out just a few hours ago that he was fined €20,000 for being, I think, 4 hours late to training the other day, fined by Niko Kovac. And Tim, I know this is something that you wanted to talk about. Is this really a sign of worry, do you think, for Davies, kind of like we saw with Renato Sanchez towards the end of his career at Bayern? Or do you think this might just be a one-off accident from a really, really young and potentially slightly immature guy?
Yeah, I don't think there's really cause for concern here. This is, I like the idea that the coach doesn't like give anybody a special treatment, which is something that I will have to come back to. But he's identified that, you know, no matter what your standing is in the team, if you aren't at training or if you refuse to, or if you, you know, I think Sanchez was, he refused to participate in the post-game training. Alphonso Davies was 4 hours late. In any profession, you can't do that. And I know that, I don't know, because I've never really spoken to him ever, but you get the impression that Alphonso Davies is a guy that just loves what he does. So this isn't going to be something that's come out of spite or anything like that. I think 20,000 is maybe a bit harsh. I always think that fines like that should be relative to their salary. Because obviously if you're the highest paid professional player at the club, you should be of like the highest professional standing. You know, so like if Lewandowski was to show up 4 hours late and then Alphonso Davies shows up 4 hours late or Arp or one of the younger players, it's somewhat excusable if you're younger, because, you know, you're not the role model for that. You shouldn't have to be the role model for everybody around you. So, yeah, to that extent, I think 20,000 is a bit much. But I love the sense of, I guess, like authority that Kovac is putting out there. With that, the fact that Kimmich was so vocal in his criticism after the first game, and I think he complained about, you know, why weren't we making any substitutions? Like, we should have done this, we should have done that. I think he wasn't fined because of that. Don't know why. I can't remember exactly why, but I think it was more just like the context of which Kimmich said it. I'm not sure if he said it to a reporter or if he was just saying it to Kovac. I honestly can't remember. But yeah, I'm admiring the discipline, because I think last year there were a number of players in the club, people like Mats Hummels, like James Rodriguez, who were very critical of just about everything that Kovac was doing, and also like more senior players like Ribery. So the fact that Kovac is now saying we're doing it this way if you do this, you like this will happen. I have to admire that discipline, but still I do think that 20K is quite a lot, but 4 hours is quite a lot as well. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts.
20,000 euros is a lot, no matter who you are. But I guess, yeah, you're right. That I think that giving the fine certain tiers based on players would maybe be smart. Sebastian alluded to it earlier, but the transfer window officially closed earlier today. Bayern Munich made no last-minute signings despite the hopes and prayers of Bayern fans all across the globe. They almost made one final move, and that was selling Jerome Boateng to Juventus, but that seemed to kind of fall apart at the final hours. So, Sebastian, are you happy that deal fell through and that Boateng's still at Bayern, or would you have liked to have seen that one go through?
Well, I would not say happy. I would have been happy if we had signed a defensive midfielder or a right back or maybe another striker. Then I would be happy. But I guess I still prefer Boateng staying because yeah, that means that at least we leave the possibility open to keep Pavard on the right side if we feel like it. Not that I'm exactly a huge fan of playing a, well, more or less a center-back type as a right-back. But yeah, it's just if a center-back gets hurt, we don't need to use Pavard there necessarily. We could still keep Pavard on the right side. Or if, well, maybe Kimmich gets injured, which I guess could also happen. I mean, that would be devastating. But yeah, keep our fingers crossed, I guess. Yeah, then we could still, we had still some possibilities there. I think it's always a bit strange. Usually you kind of want to have a backup for every position, but it's just not as simple as that with the squad we have right now, because obviously several people can cover several different positions. So that, I guess that's a good thing, but it can also, and I think that has happened, it can also lead to people misjudging how many players we actually need. Because if we look at how many injuries we had in recent years, I think if we have as many injuries as we had, this is still going to be very, very tough. This squad is going to be very, very thin. And yeah, we really need to be able to rely on some of the young players. And I really hope Kovac is taking steps so he can rely on them, and he dares to rely on them, I guess. If Lewandowski goes down, really, we need Arp to step up, for example. And right now, I don't think Kovac is ready to trust him. I think he would rather, I don't know, put Thomas Müller there or something like that. Yeah, and that's really a big problem from my perspective. If we had a coach who I could trust to put the young players in there and maybe dare to bring Arp on, for example, to stay with that example, I guess after halftime or something like that, or even dare to start Arp over Lewandowski in one game, even. Yeah, then this would be a completely different story, but that, I guess that's not where we are at this point. But I think that's where we need to be in the second half of this season.
Well, Hasan Salihamidžić in an interview earlier this week mentioned something about, you know, you can't have a squad only full of top players. You have to have room for youngsters. And then he mentioned something about the, you know, it's the coach's responsibility to play those youngsters. Tim, was that possibly some thinly veiled criticism against Kovac for not really giving the young guys a chance?
If it was, I'd say it's fairly unjustified. All right, maybe it is justified. Who knows? We've got in Hansi Flick as the assistant coach who's got a reputation for being able to help younger players kind of break into the senior team. I don't really understand why all of a sudden Kovac is getting criticized for not being able to breed in the young players. Ancelotti didn't. In fact, Ancelotti almost forced out like three of them. Like at one point when Sanchez was considered to be one of the future midfielders for Bayern, both him, Koeman, Kimmich, they all complained, why aren't we playing enough? Pep Guardiola kind of did. Like he played Hoiberg, he played Gaudino a couple of times. Obviously, Kimmich was quite fortunate in that sense, like being able to say, sure, I'll do it to whatever the question was. Bayern haven't really been able to produce like solid young players that get into the team since like Müller and Alaba and Badstuber. But Badstuber is a slightly different case because of his quite unfortunate injuries. But even up until then, he was a regular player in the senior squad. It's just, I don't think it should be like Kovac's responsibility to do that. He should be somewhat responsible. But I think like doing something like that, like managing all of these players, and then on top of that, getting all of these young players ready as well. Like the reason, like he has a team for a reason, and he has like evidently specialists in Hansi Flick for a reason. I wouldn't necessarily say that this was like a criticism towards Kovac. If it was, I don't think it's justified, because, well, I at the risk of repeating myself, like why him? Like why is it now all of a sudden such an important thing? I get that we should do it, but if we're going to complain now, why weren't we complaining before?
I guess if I may, I think there are two things I would like to say. That the first thing is, I think we haven't had as much talent, as much young talent on the squad as we have now in a very long time. I think that would be one reason I can't see why we put that in Kovac. And the other thing is, I think I want to differentiate here a little bit, because for me that's really two questions. I think Kovac has done quite a good job at making young players better. I think that's very true, for example, for Gnabry. He was not that young, but still a young player. And I think it's in part at least due to Kovac that he's the player, that he became the player he is now. And I think the other side is giving enough young players playing time. And I think that's basically the thing that has been lacking. And that's really just his responsibility. No one else can do anything about that, I guess. That's my problem there.
I guess I'm somewhere in between. I would agree with what both of y'all said. And I think Kovac is opening up more and more to the idea of playing youngsters. So, I mean, he played Alfonso Davies for 30 plus minutes the other day, or maybe not quite 30, but almost 30 minutes the other day. I think we'll start to see more and more of that. And if we don't, you know, 2 or 3 months from now, and Bratzo wants to come out and say something, you know, in a similar vein, then I think it might be more justified then. And I don't think that it should be interpreted as criticism either. I think it was just, you know, making a statement to the media. While we're on the topic of Bayern's higher-ups, Uli Hoeneß confirmed earlier this week that he is stepping down as president and he won't be running again later this year. He will be replaced by former Adidas CEO Herbert Heiner. Also, Oliver Kahn has been confirmed to take over as Bayern CEO in 2021 after spending a year of training underneath Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. First, let's start with the Uli Hoeneß move. Sebastian, we've talked about this before, so I assume I'll know your answer, but do you think this is the right call from Hoeneß to finally step down and let someone come in as club president?
Well, I guess on the one side, it definitely makes sense because he's not getting any younger. And yeah, I think we really need younger people taking over sooner or later anyway. And I think it makes sense to have a clearer picture of whose responsibility. I think that really has been a problem since Uli was back. That, yeah, it wasn't as clear, I think. I mean, that's always tough to say from the outside, but from what I saw, I think it was not always very clear who would have the last word, so to speak, who would take the very important decisions, who would have more of a say in that between Rummenigge and Hoeneß. So I guess it makes sense. On the other hand, if I could have decided this, I would have preferred actually for Rummenigge to step down and Hoeneß staying there until Kahn is in and then looking for a new president and deciding who's taking over Hoeneß's other responsibilities, I guess, and he's going to fill that vacuum, I guess. So I would definitely have preferred that. I'm a huge fan of Kahn coming in. I guess you already know that. And I think that's definitely the right choice there. I guess I can't wait, actually, because in the media, there has been a lot of talk about this power struggle between Hoeneß and Rummenigge. And I don't know how much of that is true. I guess a bit is probably true. And I guess I'm more of a Hoeneß man in that kind of situation. I'm definitely on Hoeneß' side in most things from as much as we know about the whole situation there. So, yeah, I can't wait for Kahn to dig over, actually, because I think he's probably going to do a good job. And then we're going to have a clearer situation where everybody knows who's deciding what. And, yeah, who's the guy who has the last word there.
I know basically absolutely nothing about the man who's supposed to replace Uli Hoeneß. Do either of you have any information about him? All I know is his connection with Bayern is that he served on the board for a little bit. But would either of you have any idea if he's going to be, you know, a similar type of replacement to Hoeneß?
I've got absolutely no idea, I'm afraid. I've always been kind of like unclear on like what the difference between like a CEO and a president is. So the fact that this is just a guy that happens to have had like another quite high ranking job, that's kind of good enough for me.
Yeah, I guess I saw a comment, I'm not sure where, but you know, it said if you can run Adidas, then I'm sure, which I know y'all say that differently, but if you can run Adidas, then I'm sure you can run FC Bayern as well. So I guess I would probably agree there.
It should be Adidas, no idea whoever came up with anything else, because that's just the name, basically. And usually would stress that on the first, or it derives from a name. He's more of a business guy, I think. And I think it's obvious that he's not going to be the presence that Uli Hoeneß has been. I think that's kind of at the heart of what I have been, what I said before, that Hoeneß, well, he has been Aufsichtsratsvorsitzender and he has been president and whatnot. But yeah, it has been, well, he has been more, I guess. He used to be the manager, and I think he was very much involved in a lot of things that people in those positions would naturally not be that way. So I guess there's going to be a big change. And I would not say that the new guy, that Heine, is really taking over everything that Hoeneß was, and we should not expect him to be that. I guess that's a good thing in a way, because Salihamidžić really wants to be part of what Hoeneß was, and I guess either he needs to leave or he needs to be that, and we will see in the very near future, I think in November. So I guess that's more or less a good thing, because I really would not want a new Hoeneß in there with as much responsibility as Hoeneß had. So
yeah, fair enough. I think I would agree there. You know, after all that Uli Hoeneß has been through at this club and then everything he's done, he obviously holds a position of authority that can't just be matched by someone coming in from the outside and immediately taking over. I guess it's kind of the final question, Tim, but Sebastian says he thinks that this may mean Salihamidžić has more responsibility at the club. How do you feel about that?
Terrified. Absolutely terrified. This, there was that thread on Twitter that essentially outlined how his job is to, you know, help sculpt this team into something with like a sense of longevity and identity. And every major transfer that Bayern made this season or this window, they had to get somebody else in to do it for him, because he was so preoccupied with being, obviously this is all just speculation, like nobody knows for sure exactly what happened, but there's like a lot of speculation, which you know, there's no smoke without a lot of fire. Like, he seemed to be so obsessed with signing Hudson-Odoi. He was incredibly vocal, almost like dangerously vocal about Leroy Sané. And then when Kovac was vocal about Leroy Sané, Salihamidžić said, "What on earth do you think you're doing? You'll ruin this whole operation." There just seems to be so... It's great to see that Bayern take care of their own. Like, it's honestly wonderful, and it's part of what makes the club so, like, so welcoming as a fan. But I just can't help but feel that Salihamidžić should not be in the position that he's in, let alone anything higher. Like, our biggest success, and having read the Pep Confidential book, when you have somebody like Matthias Sammer, who had no connection to Bayern before, but he knew football, like, he was a hugely successful player, very successful manager. When you have him, like, calling those shots and being so, like, being such an important figure in that success between 2013 and 2016, I think, when he stepped down, it just kind of shows that you can't just, you know, you just need to know the club a little bit. Like, there's so much more to it. And if he wants to move into a position that's, you know, slightly closer to president, I really don't think that he's ready for that sort of step up. He may well be in the future. Like, you know, everything's a learning curve. This is his first real role in the football business rather than as a player. So he's obviously only going to get better because that's how time works. But right now he is, in my opinion, very far off it.
Well, Sebastian, unless you have anything to say in response to that, then that'll wrap us up.
Yeah, well, I think it's really tough to judge what to do with him at this point. I think it's perfectly understandable that he didn't do everything right. I think we saw the same thing with Christian Nerlinger before, and it's really just not so easy. Sammer, I think, has never had so big a role, at least in terms of transfers and so on. So... yeah, I guess you would really have to expect for things to go wrong, especially with Salihamidžić not having as much experience as Sammer had. He at least had been a head coach for a while and also had different roles, I think, on the DFB. Was that before? Not quite sure, but he definitely had different roles in football that Salihamidžić didn't have to that extent. So I think it's to be expected that mistakes can be made there. And I think we really cannot blame the whole thing on Salihamidžić, especially with Hoeneß and Rummenigge not always being on the same page. So he can only lose in that situation, right? He's going to be the scapegoat if too much goes wrong. So, yeah, I feel like on the one hand, it's tough to really blame everything on Salihamidžić. And he really would need more time. On the other hand, yeah, can we allow him more time? I think as a decision needs to be made. We cannot have even more chaos when Kahn comes in and is supposed to take over. Stability would be great. So yeah, it's a very, very tough situation, and I hope that they know what they're doing there.
Well, I think we could all agree with that last statement. We all hope we know what they're doing, but that's all the time that we've got for this episode. If you're a fan of the pod, if you've enjoyed listening, do us a big favor and leave us a 5-star review. We greatly appreciate it. It helps us out a whole lot. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SuperBayernPod. You can get in touch with us there. You can also email us at SuperBayernPod@gmail.com. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, all the major podcast catchers. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell all your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.